This month begins the foray into the first of the eighth of the Noble Eightfold Path. And I'm wonderful to be here with you in place of my esteemed colleague, Nina. Hopefully you're keeping well, Nina, wherever you are, and life is treating you well and sending you lots of metta. Today I'm going to be talking about right view as a portal for dismantling delusion in an age of fragmentation. That's the notional title. Right view as a portal to dismantling delusion in an age of fragmentation. Just trying to bring a different spin to it. And the summary of the talk is shaped by the current state of the world, trauma, polarization, the calcification of the loneliness epidemic, according to the former Surgeon General, and the Buddha's ancient teaching on samadhi, right view. And what we're going to explore in the next 20 or so minutes is what right view truly is, from what I found, why it's the first and most essential factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, how it's cultivated, and how the realization of right view leads to the cessation of suffering. Of course, the research I use to support this will reveal sort of my biases towards the Burmese thinkers, particularly Mahasi Sayadaw and Ledi Sayadaw. I borrow from their thoughts on the topic as well as others. And we'll get into the definition of right view, how to recognize its arising, what obstructs it in modern life, and how wrong view dismantles peace and perpetuates suffering. And I'll add a peppering of my own reflection, a reflection on two from my own realization of this point, and then just see where it takes us. So I want to start with what the Venerable Sariputta said in the Samaditi Sutta, which is in the Majjhima Nikaya 9. And this was a conversation with other mendicants in Jetta's Grove. And what Sariputta said to a question that was posed to them about what right view is as follows. When a noble disciple understands what is unwholesome, the root of the unwholesome, and then what is wholesome, and the root of the wholesome, that is right view. I read again. When a noble disciple understands what is unwholesome, the root of the unwholesome, what is wholesome, and the root of the wholesome, that is right view. I should also say this, that any limitations you notice from what I'm sharing with you today are mine and mine only. Mine and mine only. And still present an opportunity for your own practice and your own wisdom. So now I want to go into the meaning of samadhi, right view. And of course, it comes with a perspective from the Buddha. And the Buddha said this in the Mahacakkhara-saka Sutta, and I'll put this in the chat shortly. What the Buddha said specifically was, right view comes first. It leads the way. When right view is perfected, all the other factors of the Noble Eightfold Path follow. Without right view, every other step, even meditation, risks reinforcing delusion and the sense of a permanent separate self. So to go to the etymology of the word, right view, samaditi. Sama, meaning complete, correct, harmonious, or aligned with reality. Sama from the Pali language. Then diti, meaning view, vision, or even perception. And of course, I bring this up because some of you, some teachers, and others prefer wise view vis-a-vis right view. Because right view seems to emphasize this rigid correctness. And it doesn't matter which you prefer, wise or right. I personally prefer right because for me, right has the cumulative association with purification in my conditioned mind, if one might say, but wise view might be preferable to you. But you realize that it's about living in adaptive alignment with reality, which is essentially the Four Noble Truths and the three characteristics. So a monk I really respect who runs the Bhavana Center in West Virginia, Bhante Gunaratana, who precepted the monk who precepted me, said, right view is not about holding correct opinions. It is the continuous seeing of things as they actually are, not as we wish them to be. About seeing things as they actually are, not as we wish them to be. And so a few days ago, Thierry Sala sent out some reflections, notes, and exhortations on right view. And in there, she sort of talked about the Eightfold Path being a secular path, not a linear path. And in that, she mentioned that many come to the Dharma via meditation. And that's a good place to start from. But it's important to note that without right view, right intention can become ambition. Without right view, right speech can become flattery or manipulation. Without right view, seeing things as they are, right livelihood can serve greed or status. Similarly, without right view, right mindfulness becomes obsessive self-monitoring. And right concentration becomes an escape. Because Mahasi Sayadaw said, without right view, even meditation becomes another form of craving. That is to desire peace or transcendence as possessions. And to support that, it also said, right view is about purifying your view, because when you purify your view, the path purifies itself. So, still on the topic of the mechanics of right view, and the levels of right view. There is the mundane perspective, just like anything in the Dharma, there are always formulas. So the two formulas in how you one considers a deepening of right view, which is from the mundane perspective and the supramundane perspective. And the mundane perspective, which is the way we relate to phenomena on an everyday basis, right view includes or is made up of the realization that karma is real, that intentional actions create consequences. And conversely, wholesome actions lead to clarity and growth, whereas unwholesome ones lead to confusion and suffering. So yesterday I was driving and I saw somebody racing to the stop sign so they could cross. And then I got to the stop sign and then drove off when I could have paused and have them cross. And I felt horrible And so at the next stop sign, I paused on purpose, and it felt so amazing to have all these people cross. Mundane example. Then also, speaking about the mundane right view, faith and ethical causality includes generosity and virtue. But now coming to the super mundane right view, Lokuttara Samaditi is rooted in the direct realization of the Four Noble Truths. A direct realization of the Four Noble Truths. And the ability to see dependent origination in all things, except what is independently originated. And the ability to hold the insight into impermanence, into suffering or unsatisfactoriness, and to the recognition that there's no permanent self or anatta. So right view, direct quote from Mahasi Sayadaw, right view matures when no phenomena is taken as me or mine and craving continues. Craving ceases. So anytime I think of these words, not mine, not me, not mine, not myself, I think about you, Cheryl. So how do you know you've realized right view? There's a lot of long-term practitioners here. Some arahants, some stream enterers, some once returners. We know that. You know you've reached right view when you have less emotional reactivity. Less emotional reactivity. I know in my personal experience, I always had this discomfort with rudeness and bullying and disrespectful communication or engagement. So my unhealed self thought if I was more polite, then that would teach the other person to be polite, and therefore they would be polite. Wrong. Then when I thought I had some insight, I thought, well, then the skillful thing is to distance from myself from anyone who's impolite or who doesn't communicate like me. Again, also incorrect. My current view is whether a person communicates politely or impolitely has nothing to do with me. That's the dharmic view. The therapeutic view would be it's a projection and a mirror revealing what I need to fix within myself. Again, an opportunity for practice. Versus the old version of myself that wanted to be even more polite to teach or dismissive, not dealing with that. The second is a decreased clinging to experiences, roles, or outcomes. A decreased clinging to experiences, roles, or outcomes. Is life going to go back to the way it used to be? Are things going to get better or different? Are my children going to be nicer to me? Is my spouse going to be more caring to me? Are my neighbors going to be more polite? Is my boss going to be more compassionate? Is my health going to hold up? I'm changing. How do I feel about that? How do I feel about these shifts? Again, Cheryl, not me, not mine, not myself. Then the third I want to highlight is you realize compassion and forgiveness arise spontaneously. Compassion and forgiveness arise spontaneously. See, for a long time, I thought I had forgiven my father, but I hadn't. Because this is a man who told me at 17 I was going to fail in life. And with my insight now, I know why he was the way he was and why he said the things he did. They were defensive projections. Defensive projections. Then there's equanimity towards praise and blame. This is sort of an egolessness. You know how you're having a conversation with someone and you tell them you're going to Santorini and then they're in a hurry to tell you about the experience in Greece? Good grief. Can't we just let the person have their moment? It has nothing to do with you. Even if you've been to Santorini 100 times. And then there is confidence rooted in direct experience. That goes without saying. Confidence rooted in finding out for yourself. Are you Pasiko? So again, Bante Gunaratana said here, when right view ripens, experience is no longer owned, it flows. So, right view without talking about how to skillfully embody this will not be sufficient. So here I want to cover how right view trains your perception from direct realization to recognize what is wholesome, kusala, what is wholesome in your thoughts and actions. For example, right now, wherever you are, examining your thoughts in this very now moment, at the 50th minute of the hour, wherever you are your thoughts and actions right now rooted in wisdom and compassion? Right now. And then, of course, we can't talk about skillfulness without talking about what's unskillful or unwholesome, ekusala. Right view also includes recognizing when you're in wrong view. And hopefully that brings you back to right view or to neutrality. That'd be a cartoon. Now, again, according to Sayadaw, there are three types of wrong view. The first is denial or kamma vipaka, which is the belief that actions have no consequences. That itself is rooted in ignorance because karma works like a blockchain. You can't delete it. You can't delete the blockchain. You can't delete karma. So denial is a root of wrong view. So is nihilism or uccedaditi, which is the belief that death ends all, so nothing matters. Kind of if you were partial to French existential philosophy, you could be justified in thinking in this way. Then the third is sasatta-ditti, or eternalism, the belief in a permanent self or soul. So how do you end wrong view? In some practical examples, in addition to direct realization of the Four Noble Truths and the Three Refuges, of course, some examples I'd offer start with Kalyanamitta, association with noble friends. Because exposure to the right teachings prevents reinforced deluded views. So Kalyanamitta is a powerful compendium to right view. So is wise attention or right attention, directly investigating causes and results and effects. Then ethical living. Living ethically. Not because you're being observed, But because the observer is the observed, to borrow from Jiddu Krishnamurti, the one aware is awareness. Then, of course, mindfulness and insight, the Satipatthana, and then letting go of view clinging, even releasing correct views when they become an identity. Now, in contemporary times, these are all nice to hear, but in contemporary times, we know right view is very difficult these days for many number of reasons. There's a lot of spiritual consumerism. The algorithms polarize and continue to polarize the world, also bring together people in the world, but the algorithms have become an entity on their own, as AI also becomes even more sentient. There's a lot of political tribalism. And there's also trauma reactivity mistaken for wisdom. And the loneliness epidemic, especially among young people. I mean, across all demographics, in fact. So we know that right view, although the Noble Eightfold Path is not a linear one, you enter from wherever you enter, but without the foundation of right view, seeing things as they actually are. Mm-hmm. Let me make this even more real, and I almost sound like a broken record because you may have heard me say this before in the past. The more my view on reality changed, my whole life changed. It ended my marriage, my second one. It ended my old career path in corporations. I worked for the Gates Foundation, which is what brought me to Seattle. I left behind many friends. Places I used to go to, I don't. Places I used to live, I don't anymore. As I deepened my practice, and the more deepened I got into the practice, I became aware of how much wrong view I had, rooted in my own unhealed nature from my own trauma. But I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. So right view was the exact panacea I needed. To finally get to know my anatta, my person, as Philip Moffat will say, my avatar, and the conditions behind the avatar. So right view had and continues to have a very visceral and positive impact in my lived experience. Because I still could be married, I still could be, but I would be absorbing a lot of trauma and unhappiness. But I still could be and look happy and perfect. As my mother used to say, you know, marriage is for social reasons, it's about showing up and looking happy together. No. So in what ways is your own wrong view keeping you trapped? Because imagine when we have an aggregate of people with right view, there will be no suffering. Suffering exists not because of systems and history and current context. Suffering exists because of wrong view. But we know out of suffering comes liberation. Out of suffering, out of ignorance comes wisdom. Out of darkness comes awareness. I'm borrowing from the law of polarity from ancient Egypt as I say this. It's also quantum mechanics. So whatever you're holding on to in your wrong view is what's keeping you trapped. And we are all at different levels and layers in our walk, right? And so there's different layers that you uncover as you carry on. So I want to end with this exhortation. Rooted in the quote from the Venerable Sariputta that I shared in the beginning, which is, right view comes first. It leads the way. And when right view is perfected, all the other factors of the Noble Eightfold Path follow. These are the words of the Buddha, true 2600 years ago, with quantum mechanics. About non-locality and time being an illusion, thereby proving it's still relevant today. Want to thank you for your kind attention as you reflect on your own direct realization of right view. And the recognition of how your own wrong view from your previous causes and conditions delays your own liberation. So that's the message. Thank you. That's the message. That's the message. But today we're not breaking it into little groups. So we'll just keep the last group going. And here I want to open it up for the next 15 or 20 minutes or so for thoughts, comments, questions, reflections, counter reflections, and so forth. Kathy, Cheryl, go for it, please.
I mean, I mute myself. Thanks for that talk, Nana. That was great. That was wonderful. Right view is has been challenging to understand for some reason lately. And as we're diving into it, it's great to really understand it as it is the first. It is if we have right view, then everything else follows. But what I wanted to say was that ikusala, it's a good thing that recognizing ikusala is also right view, because without that we couldn't practice with it. And it's and right view to me has also lately been about having compassion towards myself when I don't quite measure up or whatever, you know. That's also right view, and I've been really kind of looking at that aspect of it. But it can be very confusing in today's world. And I appreciate all the ins and outs of what you shared with us today, Nana.
Thank you, Cheryl. I think the point you're making is a very powerful one. If I may reflect it back to you, particularly on what you talked about, ikusala, being unwholesome. And in my view, any moment, this is just a personal reflection, any moment I catch myself being unwholesome, like the example I gave on the stop sign, right, is a moment to be celebrated. Because that I have seen it is proof of my mindfulness, of my concentration, of my samadhi. You see? So that in itself is an occasion for celebration. I caught it.
I know, the more we see it, it is. And I might have to see it a number of times. really. But in that moment, traffic's a great example of it too. So I appreciated your example.
Very mundane one, but yeah, no, thank you. Thank you.
The name will be there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, Suze.
Wonderful talk, Nana. Thank you so much. And I'm kind of following along on Cheryl in that I was recently on retreat and a really old view that I thought I had gotten rid of. I thought I had understood it enough that it was not still living and working its stuff with me came up. And one of the things that I realized is the harm that can get caused by manifesting wrong view. The wrong view in my case was started when I was a little kid to protect me. It was like to make sense of what a world that wasn't very sensible. And, but of course, as an adult, it's a whole different world. And as an adult, this was some years ago, but I lived it out and hurt somebody that I cared about deeply. And it was an important reminder that old right views, just like all karma, they have a consequence. And sometimes, an unintended consequence, it's humbling to look at that. And I just, I'm not beating myself up with it. I have a lot of compassion for the one who did that, but also a lot of regret because the person I hurt, I cared about deeply. And, so anyway, just there's that piece of it that I wanted to share.
Yeah, no, Suze, that's really powerful. And I think what you're pointing to, if I may reflect it, is that even when a lot of the layers are peeled through commitment and devotion and, and all the factors of awakening, that there are deeper layers that one couldn't get to this layer without first unfurling previous layers, right? So even this recognition, maybe a deeply embedded memory, is and as much as it's a cause for regret, is also, I am projecting a bit, a cause for celebration, I would think. Even if it's a quiet, kind of somber, like, okay, I know this now.
Yeah, it's the celebration part is remembering the gift of the practice and that, oh my goodness, without this, I could have just kept going and hurting other people and myself as well, of course, and limiting the limitation of these old views is another piece of it. So anyway, thank you again, Nana.
Powerful, powerful, Suze. Thank you. Powerful, powerful, powerful. Jordan, then Elizabeth, and then Candace.
Yes, thank you. That was a wonderful talk. I've been having trouble kind of wrapping my head around this and really getting it. And this is the first talk that I feel like I've really connected. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
One thing that kind of really came up for me was you mentioned like seeing something or someone as they actually are. And I was curious about that. Like, how can I see someone as they actually are? It sounds like there is like some truth behind what they show me or even my own perception of what they are, and I can see it. So yeah, can you help explain that?
So here I would trust your own wisdom, but here's what I will share, if I may. Yes, knowing that your wisdom is most paramount in your life. I'm going to quote this French American novelist, Anais Nin, or Anais Nin. And she said something famously, which is quite dharmic. I don't know if she was a Buddhist or not, but she said, and I paraphrase, "We do not see life as it is. We see life as we are." Jordan, we do not see life as it is. We see life as we are. So the key, using this formula to seeing life as it is to see yourself as you are without delusion. Because again, she said, you can only meet people as deeply as you've met yourself. In other words, if one has not focused on eliminating greed, hatred, and delusion internally, how can you see the world as it is? You cannot. Because you still will be projecting from a dependent, originated standpoint. And to see life as it is to see it without your distortion, without any projection. You know, I often would say when one is an empathic person, you can ascribe that personality to even the most narcissistic person and believe that they are that. And so you would act from this misinformed condition perspective until they hurt you. And that forces you, that suffering forces you to begin to see them as they are. That seeing someone as distorted or undistorted has nothing, shouldn't have anything to do with the view from which you're seeing. So the ability to see things as they are starts with seeing yourself as you are, without distortion, without fear, without favor, without trying to rewrite the script. You know, think about the example that Suze just shared a few moments ago, Jordan. In my retreat, in my meditation, I realized this deeply embedded scenario where I'd caused harm. Now, without seeing that, and Suze, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm using your example. Without seeing that, how could Suze see the reality that the person she hurt was unintentional, the person didn't deserve to be hurt? She couldn't have seen that without seeing herself deeply as she was with that conditioning. So really seeing the world as it is and people as they are first starts with the not self, the person, this avatar. Because it's amazing how deluded we can be towards ourselves. You know, to know thyself is the hardest thing. That's why we bypass and hide. But to know thyself with compassion, Sue said it, Cheryl said it, they used the words compassion, is the path to seeing other people clearly with the eye of compassion. In the same way I view my father with the eyes of compassion and my mother with the eyes of compassion. Do you see, Jordan? Or am I just making this up? Tell me.
No, that makes a little more sense. Thank you. It definitely sounds like it's a heck of a journey, though, too. Because as you mentioned, yeah, knowing myself is one of the hardest things. It feels like it'll take quite a while.
You know, then that also is an illusion. Because enlightenment right here, right now, there is no time. Well, that's a different conversation, Jordan.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jordan. Elizabeth and Candace, then Lauren. Oh, I can't hear you, Elizabeth. You're still on mute.
There we go. Okay. First of all, thank you so much for this wonderful talk. I took some notes. I felt like I saw myself in so much of it, and I got a few light bulbs. So, and as you were talking, one of the things for me that I realized about right view is I struggled with right, and I think a lot of it came from I came from a very top-down authoritarian family and a Catholic religion that really nearly killed me. And so when I first began Buddhism, to study Buddhism 20 years ago, I avoided sanghas because I was so afraid I would get into something again that would be top-down. And so for 20 years, I practiced with teachings and I go to some seminars, but I avoided a sangha community because I didn't really believe that wise attitude would go with wise view. So, and the thing that I think has helped me the most is realizing that they go together and that this really is a whole community of people who are seeing for themselves. And that's been lovely. And so to realize that that teaching is at the heart is that we all do see for ourselves. And so to me now, the thing of right view to me is experimenting. And the thing that leads to, if it's suffering, that leads to more suffering. Eventually, I find that out, and I get those consequences. And if it's suffering that leads to less suffering, eventually, I learn those consequences. And so the piece that you said about denial being ignorance of consequences, to me has been so helpful. And I feel like part of my job right now is there's so much delusion that I feel overwhelmed a lot of the time. And I'm like, how can I have right view and yet not see a right path? And all I get is just this one step. And it's like, is it deluded? Is it not? Well, let's wait and see. And that's where I'm at so much of the time. And the other thing I really got is I'm aware of a lot of the factors, but the mentioning of the epidemic of loneliness in young people was very important for me. Thank you. So thank you for all of those. And thank you, everyone. This is my first year of committing to taking refuge with other people. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, everything you just shared, Elizabeth, if I may reflect what I heard from you, is the rigidity of the conditioning you experience in the Catholic faith is what accelerated your right view, your own internal wisdom. And this is the beauty of the Dharma, that it's all about direct realization. No one can tell you. You know. Direct realization, find out for yourself, which is different from here's how you look when you're sanctified and purified. That's what I heard you say. It's powerful. Candace, please.
Thank you so much for your talk, Nana. And knowing that you stepped up to talk today at the last minute is just astonishing. So much of what you said is, I took notes and I'm really going to be pondering, but I wanted to share one small thing that I've been curious about recently. And it was the right view about impatience. I've been curious about why I'm impatient and what might be a little mantra that would calm me down. And I realized that it's the view that there's some other thing I should be doing now. There's some other place I should be. There's another me that I should be. And the little mantra that has really been working for me is, I'm exactly where I need to be right now. This is where the universe needs me to be right now. And when I think that, my heart opens to whatever is going on. I soften. Whatever is here is important. And all of that feeling, that edgy feeling of the impatience, is gone. I don't know if it would work for everybody, but it's, at the moment, it's really working for me.
I have goosebumps, Candace, because I had a rough day on Friday. Seemingly so. And when I came to the point of acceptance, this is the way it is. I felt the tension leave my body on Friday. There's a lot of wisdom in what you just shared. You know, the wisest things are the simplest. It's no wonder the New York Times is written at a fourth grade reading level. That's Noam Chomsky. But anyway, Candace, powerful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Nana, so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Lauren, please.
Yes, thank you, Nana. I also took notes, and you had how signs of right view. You listed some signs of right view, and you also listed some how do you end wrong view, and they kind of overlap. Mm-hmm. But the one that I starred was a sign of right view is confidence rooted in direct experience, ahipakasiko. And I think coming after Candace was just talking about an ahipasako that she had is appropriate. And the reason, so there's wrong view and being aware of wrong view and being aware of right view. And one of my difficulties is being confident in my right view. Like I'll have these kind of feelings, but just me, you know, is that, could that be something that I really can count on? And that's why I love the story of the Buddha's discovery of the middle way, because it was just a memory that came up of his childhood. And to me, that's very confidence building. And I think this is something I need to develop, but I just wanted to share that it was really great to have you point that out, that that is a sign that we do need to have confidence in ourselves. We turn inward, and these things may seem really subtle, and it might feel right, but, you know, do I just go and discount it? No, I really need to, the Buddha, you know, shows us that we need to trust that, and that it may feel subtle, but that's where our heart is, and that's where our wisdom is, and that's where rightness is. So, and that's why the right view is so important as the beginning of the path, you know, because it will keep going inward. And we keep thinking that the outward, you know, is stronger. Everybody knows that, you know, just little me, could I have any, you know, insight into what's true? So I just wanted to bring that up as I think a really important point. Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. That's really powerful because, you know, I recently had a chat with Carrie on some of these topics, Carrie Peterson, and she talked about softness, that when one becomes soft, that you actually see more, the energies are faster, you sense more. But we're talking more about the Dharma eye, Dharma knowing, which is sort of what you're pointing to. And what you're pointing to has so much wisdom and experience, because one doesn't want to get to the point where you have so much Dharma, you think, I am now a Bodhisattva. Yeah. Bodhisattva. Call me Bodhisattva from here on out. I am the original Bodhisattva G. No. And I think being with the Sangha really affirms sort of your own wisdom. And as I look at everyone here, there are once returners here. There are never returners here. There are arahants here. And you will notice in right view, one of the ways to really embody right view is to be with the Sangha, with Kalyanamitas. This is how you know. So an element of doubt is useful, not too much, right? Because it hinders you, it becomes a hindrance. But I heard what you said. It's about, it reminded me of what Carrie said about softness being a portal for going even deeper and faster.
Thank you.
A lot of wisdom in that, very subtle, a lot of wisdom. Yeah. Julie, please, Julie.
Thank you, Nana, and for a great talk, and thank you, everyone, for sharing. I think what I've been practicing with is some of the discomfort that comes with seeing things for what they are, and so there's more to go. There's more to do for me as a practice. I also had a bad day on Friday, and, you know, I was definitely seeing things for what they are, but the acceptance wasn't quite there. And as I continue to practice, I think just hearing you say acceptance, and that's part of the practice. And so I'm just, you know, practicing with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's been wonderful to hear you say that. It sort of reminds me of what Candy shared as well. And that you so you're aware of your discomfort, and that you're speaking about it today is proof of your skillfulness with this particular challenge.
Thank you.
Thank you. So maybe one more before we move into announcements, Mary. Thomas, please. Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much, Nana, for your talk. It resonated very well with me, and I've been a student of Right View for many years. I found it challenging to understand because it's so different from my sort of normal reality. But I also felt that investing in that was really helpful because it is the starting point for everything in the Eightfold Path. So that resonated very well. And the way I would articulate my experience is it's very much like discovering my own operating system. And what I saw is that I tend to put out conditions that I need for myself. So, with other people or in situations or in activities, I sort of want things to be in a certain way. And then when if I get that, I'll be happy. And guess what happens? It doesn't quite go that way. So you're sort of suffering. So I see that mechanism operating, and it's by seeing that it's really interesting. So what happens if I show up without conditions, or which I don't think have ever happened yet, still to happen, but in at least reducing and softening those conditions a bit. And that's probably more where the space I'm in right now. They still run me to a large extent, but it's sort of a discovering of a different operating system. And I think it's super exciting. I'm still grappling, challenged, understanding it really. It's a fantastic experience. So thank you very much. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that perspective.
My thoughts are, I thank you very much because you answered Jordan's question way better than I could have. Jordan, were you paying attention, Jordan? I'm calling you out. Where are you, Jordan?
Yeah, that resonated really well for me. Thank you.
Thomas, you see what just happened? This is your wisdom. Your wisdom. Trust your own wisdom in the same way I trust my wisdom. And trusting my wisdom includes knowing that I don't know. That is trust in your wisdom. Or in the way that Lauren shared a few moments ago. It's not doubt, it's about trusting it and then being in the space of the Sangha or Kalyanamitas who are sort of a mirror to truthful insight. So thank you, Thomas. Thank
Thank
you.
you so much.